Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday evening, everybody. I'm Tanya Hathaway, and I am your host of Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's 89.9 FM KLRB Lighthouse Christian Radio out of Stuart, Oklahoma. It's August 2nd, in case I have not said that yet. We have got Brenda Angel, who is our special guest on tonight. And Brenda Angel is vice chair of the Pittsburgh County Republican Committee. And we also have on with us James Treat, who is going to get us started. We're just going to talk about some current events regarding the arrest of ex-chief police Delbert Hardin, and James will stay on with us after that. And we also are going to have Harry Jackson and Harry Gibson on with us tonight. Harry Jackson has his own thoughts and feelings and much to share regarding policies and politics in Oklahoma. And full disclosure is that Brenda and Harry are married. And then Harry Gibson has started a committee regarding the mask mandate that has been put forth in McAllister, Oklahoma. And we'll discuss a petition or an upset about that, as well as some discussion regarding a mayor recall. The mayor there is John Brown. So there's an awful lot that we're going to be talking about in this 90 minutes tonight. And there's it's important to keep in mind that some of this really does boil down to the same things that happen in throughout each and every state, and where to regain control of the constitutional rights of we the people, and it's important to know your local statutes and laws and whatnot. But it's also important to remember that your Bill of Rights, your Declaration of Independence, that out trumps anything that is put into place that is not constitutional. Okay, so sometimes that's a matter of interpretation, but sometimes it's very, very clear. So I do want to once again thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and I don't care whether you're from Oklahoma or not in this discussion here tonight, as far as you calling in. We really want to hear from you regarding your thoughts and feelings about these subjects that are going on. And you can share with us, what it draws you to think about. Now, of course, if this is happening to you in Oklahoma or you have your own personal concerns, directly with that subject or how it relates to your location, please do call in. The call-in number is 917-388-4520. I'm going to repeat that one more time, 917-388-4520. Press the number 1, and Marty Oakley, the producer of the show, will get you in queue as soon as she possibly can, and let me know. We've got a caller on, or she comes into the show and lets us know. So it's going to be an interesting, great show tonight. The full disclosure here again is I am not an attorney, and therefore I do not offer any legal advice. What I bring to the table is my own research and my own opinion. Of course, at times, and I make sure I let y'all know that it is, y'all, you hear that? Y'all know that it is an opinion. And I also, the guests are vetted very well that come on as our special guests. And, you know, I will say that the one person that I have not spoken with that's coming on tonight, who I wish I had the opportunity to speak with in advance, is Harry Gibson. But I am very excited about having him on as a trailblazer over there in McAlester, Oklahoma, which is in Pittsburgh County. Okay? So neither Marty Oakley, Stephen Burr, and myself, Tanya Hathaway, personally or professionally, can be held liable for any error in content, and I welcome any kind, any change, any correction of error, or to be challenged with information, and that will be discussed, and if a correction needs to be made, a correction certainly will be made, because we don't like to make mistakes here, okay? But this is a place where you get to have your talk. So I'm very much looking forward to first having on James, and after we speak a little bit about Delbert Hardin, hard to forget, Delbert Hardin as a chief police, and it's all gone downhill from there, if you ask me. Chief of police, and he was downhill to begin with, if you ask me. But what it boils down to, why it seems as though there's just such a denial of the proper process in Calvin, Oklahoma, the little town of just about 250 people. When it comes to very important matters regarding the hiring of a chief of police and full disclosures and the proper credentials and the proper mental evaluations and how about just behavior on the job, or how about behavior off the job as you are still a representative of that town. James Treat, a whistleblower, a public speaker, a retired level C corporate executive, and my friend. It's good to have you on. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Thank you. So we've all been made aware that Delbert Hardin has been charged with assault and battery and strangulation. So there's been something posted in the news about it, and his picture with a warrant is out. But both of us at this point are unaware if he was bailed out or not, or if he's been picked up or not.
That is correct.
He was picked up. James, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, he was picked up, right?
He was charged. Now, I don't know the particulars of or logistics of being picked up, released on bail, particulars of that. It was one of those things where it circulated that he was charged with assault and battery by strangulation, and then it was confirmed with the publications that came out. There hasn't really been anything written in terms of the logistics of the arrest or the charges themselves that I have found.
Right, right.
There's, for lack of a better word, a newspaper rag that's called Jailbirds is where the photograph originated from, I believe. And that's a local publication that distributes the local arrests and charges for people in the Hughes County area. Hughes County, Seminole
in
area.
In the Ada News, there was State of Oklahoma versus Delbert. Hart versus Hardin Delbert Duane. One, charge number one, assault, battery, or A and B with dangerous weapon. Two, domestic, and A and B by strangulation. Now, it's my understanding,
mean,
I believe it's yours as well, that even prior to becoming chief of police in Calvin, that he had a history of at least being charged for domestic violence more than once. Is that correct?
Right. And in relationship to what you just read, that would say to me that he has been officially charged,
right,
you know, by the state. But
right.
I don't know
Which
what
mean-
his arraignment, I don't know what he pled at his arraignment.
Right. Right.
And
okay.
Yes, there was a known history of reputable character in many, many different areas, but one of them was definitely in the battering of women arena.
Right.
Where there were multiple reports to both you and I of that prior to his hiring as the police chief of Calvin, Oklahoma.
Right. That certainly should have been a huge red flag for Calvin, Oklahoma.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when the citizens gathered and when the citizens signed a signed petition, that should have been even more of a red flag, but that in and of itself was ignored by the mayor and by the town council, and it was put together and given to them in writing with hard signatures. More signatures were on it than what would have been required to get a state audit.
Right.
And his criminal history, as reported to the state, was included with that as well. He was challenged from day one as to whether he met the criteria for the application, whether an application was even filled out. And then, as it turns out, his application was incomplete, and the state, or CLEAT, required him to be fired by the town of Calvin. And then they turned right around and inappropriately rehired him because they didn't even repost the job, which they are required to repost the job under the federal guidelines of equal opportunity employment.
Right. Right. Well, they didn't do that correctly the first time or the second time.
Well, no. And, you know, you gotta take a look at the town. Town's role in this, there's been no less than seven individuals as the chief of police or the acting chief of police since 2012.
Right.
And when I say
right.
acting chief of police, the town council bent every rule and actually broke the law by having a former police chief act as the police chief on paper when he was physically unable to fulfill the job and was not in any of the day-to-day communication of the job, and they let an individual run around town acting as a police officer without a chief.
Mm-hmm.
Until that was reported to CLEAT, and then CLEAT came in and remedied that situation and made them fire the people involved. But that was instigated by the town council. And then that's led to the hiring of the current police chief. And there were disgruntled citizens prior to that had knowledge of inappropriate behavior at the previous job. And that, again, or once again, was ignored by the town council. And each one of the town council members were made aware of it outside of the town hall meetings. So this is just a willingness for them to find someone that will bend or break the law to their individual whims as town trustees.
Mm-hmm. Well, his wife has filed for a divorce, and that was filed July 14th. And it's kind of interesting because she's the same one who had gotten in touch with me and who was harassing me for having these discussions about her husband on the show, which I understand when you're with somebody you have each other's backs and whatnot, but. You know, she clearly was, taken by him and, didn't realize,
She was clearly in denial, was she not? Because she was forewarned of his previous activities.
Right, right.
And chose to ignore them.
Right. Yeah, and that is something else. That's kind of like an epidemic with, men who are abusive and women who, see right past that, don't understand it, don't get that. It really is a whole nother subject. But for me, when I see this, I'm just glad to see that there is a divorce in the process and that she now is doing what she needs to do. They do not have any children. Natural born children together, and so again, that is something else. I have looked though in I have looked for the protection order, or it looks as though she might not be seeking an order of protection, but so far. Because I just have not seen. Oh, I'm wrong. That was filed on the 13th. Okay, so there's an order of protection against him. Or I don't know if there's actually an order or there is a petition for it. So I'm just looking right now to see. It appears that it has been given, filed, dismissal of protective order. Let me see. Oh, who knows? But in any event, This is more about at this point the issue with the town of Calvin and the town of Calvin's supporting of abusive behavior because it was known to them. There were plenty of complaints about him, and Delbert Hardin did abuse his power while he was on the job, and that has been pointed out numerous times. And it was alleged to have been, anyways, because I don't think that anybody followed through with that. Instead, some matters were dropped. So,
I can say truthfully, though, without having to say alleged, I can say that he perjured himself on more than 40. Separate occasions with his signature on citations that he did not witness himself as a police officer, and or did he have any signed affidavit from anyone to support the charges.
And those were actually citations against you, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. And were,
Right. And as a matter of fact, they're still in their sealed envelopes. I just happened to get copies from the court outside of opening them. And besides that, they were not personally presented. They were sent in the mail.
Right. Okay. All right. So, and so there was no relief, no restitution for you to date so far, correct?
No, not yet.
Okay. And are you seeking that?
I'm hoping that it will wrap up in a lot that has to come or will be coming with the state auditors. I'm hoping that will be part of that.
investigation?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Would that fit in the realm of the state auditor's investigation? Because
yes.
It does.
Well, it would in their hiring practices, and it also would as they have to report what crimes they find. And if they find crimes outside their alleged time period of investigation, they are still obligated to file those, and they technically have the obligation to expand the dates of their audit. Now, they are fighting that and wanting to contain their dates of the audit within the specified period as it was presented, but they, by law, are required to disclose any improprieties or illegal activities in or without in the time frame or outside the time frame, because that's part of
okay.
their discovery.
Okay. And now, so that's part of their discovery process that would compel them to review those in that investigation that would compel them to actually
report the crime or expand the audit.
Because isn't it a financial audit?
It's a financial audit by definition, but it includes policy and procedure. And it includes any illegal activities they may find. As in,
they
don't have any hard copies.
They
won't find any hard copies of citations written during that time frame because they were all thrown away. Well, that's a crime for not keeping those records. So that just shows the improprieties that were going on inside the Calvin Police Department.
And if I remember correctly, you have brought that to the auditor's. I'm sorry for interrupting
attention.
You. Go ahead.
Yes, that was brought to the auditor's attention. Because they admitted they didn't find the records that I suggested that they wouldn't find.
Right. Right. They admitted it, right. And is there a denial over those records existing that you're aware of?
I can't answer that because I don't know if they've asked the questions to the town of Calvin yet.
Okay.
Or if that will be part of the... findings.
They sure are taking their sweet time, aren't they?
Well, they have
the excuse of COVID.
Well, they have an issue. They have an overbearing issue is because when they write this audit report, they've actually got to what? They've got to write it to the correct legal entity of the town.
They said they weren't going to address that, though. Is that right? Because
that's true.
For our listeners. Yep.
That's true, but they still have to put a name on the audit.
Well, what about to the the administrators, the trustees of the town?
Well, but again, the town of Calvin, or the geographic location, town of Calvin, is operating as a quote unquote municipality. Of which does
right.
not exist.
Right.
So the state has to make a choice here. Do they write the report or audit out on a entity that does not exist? Or do they simply say we didn't have the authority to audit an illegal enterprise to begin with?
Well, they had stated that they were not going to consider whether it was a legal enterprise or not, last I remember.
That's true. So if they put the town of Calvin, a incorporated municipality, they'll get challenged in court because that does not exist. And they've been made aware of the fact they will be challenged.
And I would much prefer, given the circumstances as they are, and that they have not provided financials for over 10 years, which has really put Calvin for many other reasons at risk sway in a unleveraged position because they are not qualified for any grants or anything like that, given their lack of transparency and ability to be transparent, which to me, for the many reasons that I'm aware, through certainly you and others, with quite a bit of documentation to back that up, is that there's it sure looks like there's a lot of misappropriations of funds. So I don't think they'll ever come up with those 10 years, and you know they all belong. They all personally that have been engaging in this, belong under investigation. And so I feel that personally during those years that has those financials have not been provided for, that anybody who was a trustee, and the mayor at the time should be named for the investigation. They should.
Well, the state auditor has stated that the town of Calvin does not have the necessary records to even recreate those financials. By what
they
went in.
Remember when somebody was packing up their back of their vehicle with a bunch of paperwork? Yeah.
And for the viewer's information, the state came in and microfished or copied everything in the town of Calvin's records when they came in. So it's not a matter of being able to go back and recreate them, but why what they're looking at, they've made the determination the town of Calvin doesn't have adequate records to recreate the financials for those years. So that still means that the public needs to know where that $4.5 million was spent. And if they can't say or substantiate with produced documents where they spent it, then the individuals need to be individually held accountable for embezzlement.
Right, right.
Of those funds.
Right. So that's right. Thank you for clarifying that. Gosh, I'm usually the one who does that, but thank you for doing that, because that would have passed by me tonight. And so before we move on to our next subject, which I'd love for you to, stay on board with us, I'd just like to discuss, the hiring of their current chief of police and, the general issues with that took place.
Well, in looking at it from today's perspective, one of the requirements of that position was that they be drug tested. There's no indication that a drug test has ever been performed on the current chief of police, Joe Chitwood.
And
yet that was one of the standing requirements that was published in the newspaper.
Right. Does that mean those records would be available for public review? Or is it to be entrusted to the trustees that was done? And
well, it's entrusted, by Cleet's standard, it's entrusted to the hiring agency to make sure that the application is complete, the high school records are complete, the employment histories are complete, the OSBI return report, the FBI return report, the psyche eval is all entrusted to the, quote, hiring agency. But this was published by the agency outside of CLEAT requirement that he be drug tested. So that being said, if he was required to be drug tested, then every employee of Town of Calvin should be randomly drug tested, and that hasn't been done.
Right. And what makes you aware that hasn't been done?
Or publicly made knowledge that they have random drug tested. It's never been discussed in a town hall meeting to date.
Mm-hmm. And that's nothing that needs to be in an executive session, does it? That should be in a public meeting.
It should
correct?
Be made in a public meeting, but just tomorrow night's council meeting has on the agenda in executive session that they're going to talk about job skills, job requirements of all the employees of the town, which should be on the public record in front of the public, that they're going to do it in executive session.
Oh, goodness.
In violation of the Open Meetings Act.
And it's been, it's, there's sure been an awful lot of question marks given the fact that they hire people without driver's licenses and that have, you know, drug bust records and you know, to contract with the town, and that they have people that that harass and break the law themselves and trespass, harass and trespass, and the town stands by it. We have a chief of police currently that that has engaged in libel,
escorting town employees to break the law. Yes,
right, and escorting town employees to break the law. Alleged libel, I have to say. Still, I have to say that as the host. But it was towards me as well, and because of the shows that
it was enacted on myself as illegal search and illegal entry.
Right. As far as for you, yes, that goes. Now, you did bring up the drug testing. Do you have any reason to believe that that the current chief of police might have some involvement or history, past or current, with illegal drugs?
There is certainly a lot of scuttlebutt, and where there's smoke, there's been a little fire.
And
nothing that we could produce factually with evidence to date.
Right.
But certainly lots of
commentary.
But
what we are aware of, that there is so much drug movement right there in that little town of about 200 people. And how many blocks is it?
Oh, my gosh. It's I think it's less than a half a square mile total footage for the town.
It's pretty much an open market there in Calvin, and he is a full-time employee who was recently given a raise of $500 more a month, and this is after the alleged libel, and he seems to be showing up even less. So there's huge issue with that. It's my understanding you're lucky if you see him there for 10 hours a week. You're lucky if you see him there for that amount of time. The claim has been that he is spending all these times doing all these investigations. Well, produce that. Produce what it is that you are really doing. And I think that GPS is to monitor employees. Would probably well pay for itself the very first year,
at some point in time, the town treasurer is going to get challenged on signing the paychecks, because she's supposed to document and support any expenditures made, whether it's employee salaries, whether it's expenditures for maintenance, et cetera, with proof that the purchases were made and or the job was done. So there's going to have to be some accounting for the hours of this police chief of which he's being paid for. Something to substantiate that he was on duty in the town of Calvin or participating in town affairs for the town of Calvin.
Right.
In an official capacity.
It's pretty obvious he's just the opposite of what Delbert Hardin was in certain ways, because Delbert Hardin just seemed to love that power and made himself well-known and seen. Right now, we're going to have to move on, but I really appreciate that update, and I hope that you will stay on with us, because, you know, your input and your expertise, as you have studied law, is always nice to hear, and your level-headedness. And there's much more, of course, to follow up with Calvin as things either happen or don't happen. So right now I'd like to bring on our next guest, and I'm wondering, Brenda Angel, are you with us?
I am. I'm here, Tanya.
Hi, Brenda. How are you, Brenda?
I'm doing okay.
Good. Oh, good. So Brenda is the vice chair, as I said earlier, for Pittsburgh County Republican Party. She is also a Smithsonian sculptress, and just I'd love you to share with our listeners what that means, an artistic evangelist, a missionary to the generations of the future.
So I sculpt and I do other work. The title Smithsonian artist was given to me when, I did a sculpture and someone showed someone a picture who showed someone a picture who showed the president and the White House called. And that was George W. Bush, and he wanted to have my sculpture for the White House.
Yes.
And it stayed on display there for 6 years, and then they moved it over to the Smithsonian, where it's been on display for the last 11 years. It's a patriotic piece, and so that's where that title comes from. The missionary to the generations of the future is I have a ministry I call Sculpt America. And I sculpt scripture in bronze, and I carve stones based on scripture. And I would like to see these sculptures placed across the country, because long after I'm gone, they will be there ministering the gospel and salvation and healing to the generations of the future. And I think all this crazy tearing down statues and trying to erase history is absurd, and it absolutely 100% needs to be stopped. But that's another note I guess we can talk about another week. But
I agree with you.
And that is my ministry.
That would be another topic where other people can raise their voices too, with you, or their feelings, right?
But And so I do have a doctorate in New Testament from a university in Florida, and that's pretty much my background. I am the vice chair of the Pittsburgh County Republican Committee, and the last year I have really been trying to clean up the county party, the GOP party here at the county level, and there's another officer that's come on board and is helping me, but there's just a lot of things going on in the background that is inappropriate. For example, the books. It took us 12 months to get the former chairman, who was also the treasurer and secretary, to turn the bank account over to the new treasurer. It should take 12 minutes.
Right.
She wouldn't even turn over the minutes of the when we were elected, so that we could take the minutes to the bank. It's an entire 12 months, and I've been harassed trying to get that cleaned up and stuff. And for the record, my name is not on the account. I fought really hard to get those books turned over, and I don't want them ever to say, "Oh, she did that because she wanted access." I made sure that I'm not on any of those papers, just for the record.
Right.
And I don't want to be on any of those papers
until
there's a full audit.
You also need your legal name for the record as well.
My legal name?
Yes.
I didn't hear you.
Yes, I think for the record, it's important to give your legal name as well.
Okay.
Just to avoid confusion.
I go by Brenda Angel for my ministry and my artwork, because I already had the sculpture in the Smithsonian when I met Harry. And I have since married Harry Jackson. And so it's Brenda Angel Jackson would be my legal name. My ministry, my art name is just Brenda Angel. My campaign name for when I ran for office was Brenda Angel, because that's what people know me as.
Right.
So, but my married name is Brenda Jackson.
Okay. And your husband is on with us tonight, correct?
He should be. We're sitting in other rooms, so it doesn't feedback.
Right, so we don't have feedback. Okay,
yeah.
So we have Harry is on with us tonight as well. Hi, Harry.
Yeah.
How are you tonight? We have two Harrys that hopefully are joining us tonight. So, Harry Jackson, we'll start with you. Are you there?
He might be feeding the horses. I will text him and tell him to get on.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. No, that's fine, because when he gets back in, we can call him on. You can just let him know. We're ready for him to come on whenever he's ready. And as well, do we have the pleasure of having Harry Gibson on with us?
Yes.
He's on with us now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well, welcome. Welcome. Thank you for waiting and being patient as we bring you on. It's very nice to have you on. I referred to you as a trailblazer because you do not seem to appreciate some things that are going on in McAllister. Would you like to let us know a little bit more about yourself and what's leading you to head this committee?
Well, I didn't go to the council meeting, but I watched it on Facebook, and I seen some stuff that I was not happy with. I felt like that they voted in the mask mandate without even really considering the people's desires, and I felt like that should be something that should not be delegated by a government. It should be delegated, well, the people is the government. It should be delegated by the people. And so I, you know, and there was plenty of information there that could have been used to have made you understand that the people were not for the mask mandate in McAllister. And I feel like that we're adults and we should know what we need to do, you know. And another thing that always bothers me, it's always they do this for my safety. And the fact remains, my liberty is far more important than my safety is. You know, you can have a safe animal in a cage, but he's not free. And so I feel like that liberty far outweighs the safety factor of it, even though I don't like to see people dying and hurt by this COVID-19 thing or whatever it is. And I'm very suspicious of the press itself on top of that. And that doesn't help any. And so it's so close to an election time that it also stands, you know, to reason that it would be to their benefit to disrupt, you know, the election for their benefit. And so I just felt like that something had to be done, and I contacted the mayor, and he just kind of laughed at me and scoffed at me about it when I was talking to him, you know, and explaining my situation and my feelings with it. And I thought, well, we need to, you know, see if we cannot recall the mayor. So my daughter began to work to find the voters lists in McAllister and in Pittsburgh County. And so she got the city clerk to give her a voter list. And I started investigating how to do a recall election or election recall or citizen referendum. And so then I contacted an attorney, and at first he put me off for a few days to contact him, but he was able to go in and go ahead and start researching this. And he gave me a call that afternoon and asked if I could come in, and I said, sure, I'll just come in. And so I went in, and he said, you are on a time schedule. You want to recall the mayor, you've got to wait until in August to do it, because the last election was in February, and you've got to wait 6 months to recall the mayor.
Right.
He said, if you want to overturn the mandate, you have got a time limit. And if you do that, you've got 30 days from the time they pass that to get enough voters to sign the referendum petition to get it put on the ballot, or to have the council to review it and reconsider it and try to repeal it. And then if they don't repeal it, it can be submitted to the vote. It will be submitted to the vote of the people. And so we decided that we would immediately start on the referendum petition. And so we started trying to get people to get on the committee because we don't have a great big, large amount of time now. And but the votes were fairly small, so we didn't have to get a whole bunch of votes from the citizens and signatures. But we have to get them by.
The requirement for the votes is a certain percentage.
Right. It's 25% of the general city election. The election race, the last mayor race was in February 11th, 2020. And they had 1,268 votes cast. So 25% of that is 317 signatures. So
That's what I was going to ask. If it was how many are eligible to vote, is it how many are eligible to vote? Is it based on those who voted? So you've clarified that. All right.
Yes,
that's brilliant.
So that 25...
With 317 signatures, it requires a forced vote for the people. In other words, when we file the petition, it automatically stops the mandate from going into effect until that it is taken care of by the council, or the people then is allowed to vote on this mandate, and that is given a specific time as well. They've got between 30 days and 1 year to put this on a ballot for the people to vote. And so we had some pretty passionate people that wanted to stop this. And so I felt like that we were just falling on our face because I couldn't get anybody to respond. But then all of a sudden, things started, you know, falling in place. And I feel like God is moving and trying to put a stop to behavior from a government that shouldn't be. That's my opinion. And, of course, I'm pretty biased.
What this did, you know, for me is it's raised questions for me, just, you know, thinking more about the show tonight is, you know, like I know of several close people to me that are autoimmune challenged. All right. And so why isn't it that those people that I know have been contacted by their specialty doctors with particular information to assist those people during this time of COVID? My hypothesis on this is because there's not enough information and that there's so much liability to even posing any kind of you must wear a mask or you must not wear a mask, right? That's a huge liability issue. So the only ones that are out talking about this are the ones that are, coming forward through, through the Justice Department, through our president, through Fauci and Birch and now, of course, we know that our president has challenged that, and he's not necessarily able to, just lean on that advice 100%, because of these other things like the hydrochloroquine. It works in Spain, it works in Italy, it works in Brazil, Mexico, France, Germany, and everywhere else. The only place that hydrochloroquine doesn't work is the U.S., right. I just don't quite understand that. And as well, what about people who have issues with having, loss of the ability to breathe well? What about PTSD, people who cannot have things put over their nose and mouth? What about, and so I agree with you and that should all be moot just because of the fact that just because of the fact that it does appear to be a breach of constitutional rights.
Well,
yeah.
I, in researching of this this coronavirus, you look at a common cold, and a common cold is caused primarily by a rhinovirus. And it's also caused, but the first virus that it pops up is a coronavirus. And I, as far as you can tell in everything, and I'm not a medical professional. My brother is a top-notch medical professional. But the fact is everything that points to it points to something that is akin to a common cold, you know. Mm-hmm. And it really is disturbing that they can make people wear a mask, a face shield, you know, and everything else where, you know, it's not in defense of the individual that is outside of that mask. It's in defense of the one that's wearing it. If you want safety, mm-hmm. wear it yourself. It works both right. ways. It's not a one-way check valve. In other words,
yes.
it doesn't protect me from it, but it gives the individual that's wearing it protection, too. That was the thing that irritated me the most, was he stated this very thing, and he put this in big, big, broad words. The mayor did. He said, I'm wearing this to protect you. And I thought, I don't need you to protect me.
Right.
In that
right.
respect, I need you to protect my liberties.
Right.
And that's basically what government is for. It's not anything right. else. And we've
and to
got
not
it all mixed up. I feel like that, and I feel like the people need to speak. I was reading an article of a man in Florida that was arrested because he didn't require the fitness center to have masks, the people in the fitness center.
Right.
And they arrested him for it. And I thought, how absolutely against the rights of the people. They're not paying the taxes for that business. They're not paying the rent, the utilities. They have nothing to do with that business. If they don't want to go in there, don't.
Right, it's free will.
If I agree. And that's my contention with the whole thing. We need to stop anything that is taking away our rights. Desmond Tutu, an African minister, said, how do you eat an elephant? A bite at a time. How do you take the freedoms away from American people? A statute, a mandate, a law, a liberty taken away at a time. Just a little one here, a little one there, and pretty soon you're in the dark.
Right.
And these people have overstepped their boundaries because the government is not supposed to take care of my health.
Right. Right.
And
you know, something else that I thought about that I should clarify, we've also, you know, we're aware of, most of us anyways, that, you know, there are others that have been out there, other doctors that have been out there to, you know, come forward and explain what's really going on, and, you know, they get snuffed out, you know,
yes.
so they're being denied their own rights of their freedom of speech. And in a way, it's kind of like, all right, well, let's do this little practice run. You remember that game, Red Light, Green Light?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you know, take two steps,
they will,
right?
Yes. They will investigate any medical doctor that speaks up about something that will work on this COVID-19. And that's just the way they are. The other medical professionals will, the AMA is the first one that will demand an investigation in them because they are practicing medicine that is not for the people. And that's the thing that disturbs me. They've hushed up people like a doctor in Odessa, Texas. They hush them up because they don't want anybody knowing that there are things that will help with this thing. And a virus, it's like any other virus. they don't have really a cure for a virus, you know, and that always bothers me that it started out as a virus. You know,
I've got my sister's an anesthesiologist, and she's like, the ventilator, you know, 90% of the people, you know, that are on a ventilator, that's it. They're done. They're doomed. And most people don't ever even want to go on them because they're so painful. And that's a DNR. It's a DNR. That's why you have things like that. They don't want to go on those little contraptions.
Right.
But yet that state, we'll get $30,000, I believe it is, for anybody that they put on a ventilator, and anybody that they're treating for COVID, it's $12,000. So where is the incentive to call somebody who otherwise would have died of pneumonia or heart failure without COVID, right?
Precisely.
So where's the incentive to not call it or to call it what it is?
Right, and I was told they cremate the people. They don't release if the person dies, that they cremate them. So then can the families have no recourse to even double check and have an independent autopsy to see if that was the cause of death?
Yeah.
Right, that destroys any evidence that could possibly be brought up to state that that was not the actual cause of the death itself.
Yeah,
and that's anything that's not done in the open scares me.
Right.
If it's not open, and it's not something that people can discuss, talk about in a good manner, and be open about the truth of the cause of it and everything else, I concern myself with it and the government. Is notorious for stuff like that when it comes to controlling people. And I do not like anybody taking away my rights. I spent some time in the military to fight for
this
country.
Thank you for your service.
I am not going to stand here idly by and allow them to take away our rights to decide to keep ourselves safe. When I was a kid growing up, I have 8 siblings. My mama said, you go get the chicken pox. If you get it, every one of them's going to get it. And she encouraged it so that we could get it over with and go on.
Get it out of the way. Yep.
Get it out of the way. And so I don't feel like that we should be so self-protective. We have become so comfortable in America that anything that might cause us to be a little bit uncomfortable, we always will bend if we're not careful. We don't want to go the other direction. And the government, if we have to face them sometimes, that's not easy to do. They're not going to leave you alone all the time. And so I just got tired of it. I seen what I wanted to see, and I heard what I wanted to hear. And when I started looking into it, I thought, well, we can get that mandate removed. Some of these people that I picked up have been absolutely so passionate that they're willing to do anything to get it stopped because they're sick and tired of it.
Because
you
didn't realize there
people.
Was a way to do something about it, right? And
right,
this incentivizes
right.
others and empowers others.
Well,
Harry, can I ask how they were going to enforce this?
Well, that's another thing, okay? That's a good question because the mayor kept saying, well, we charge you $100 ticket every time we catch you in an area where there's people close by without a mask. And then he said that he failed to waiver that, you know. And so
I have a comment on that,
right?
Right.
Well, the reason I asked that is because I've recently visited an area that required a mask. And I simply replied that I had a medical exemption. And they just stopped in their tracks. And I was allowed to pass, purchase, do whatever, because I'm protected by the HIPAA laws.
Right.
Exactly. But then he turned around and he said that if he does away with this $100 fine, that he's just going to make it where that they can get for trespassing. And not honoring, I don't know, anyway, it's a misdemeanor.
Well, no,
words,
listen, I looked that up.
But how can he do
Harry.
That if that's unconstitutional to begin with? And so right now, essentially, you're putting off the mandate. You put off that mandate, right, for
right.
up to a year. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct.
That's huge. I want to congratulate you, number one, for doing that. That's huge.
Well,
now, were you ever engaged in any kind of local government or otherwise prior to this? Really bothering you so much that you needed to do something about it?
Well, I did get involved in a little town in northeast Oklahoma some in their politics and their articles and everything, but I didn't get too involved because most of the time the people there, I knew them all, and the people that I knew were, well, they went to church with me and they were good people. And it was a good town, and the police chief was a minister, and you know, and a good man, and my boys were involved in the police department as well.
Wonderful, that's so great to hear. That really is. It's good to hear those positive stories. Thank you.
Okay, Tanya.
Yes. Yes.
Your other Harry has joined you, Harry J. has joined you, and then you have a caller
right.
from 314 area code. Do you want to take that now?
Yeah. Sure thing, and welcome, Harry. Welcome, Harry, as well. 314,
yes.
Sure.
Love to hear from you. Go ahead. You're live.
You know,
on
you
the
got
air.
A good topic here on the policies and that of this country.
Thank you.
But me, in particular, I'm very dissatisfied with what I see. And I never thought I'd see these things. No, this is Pianchi, calling from the Midwest myself.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
My name is Mr. Pianchi.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pianchi, for calling. Okay, go ahead. I didn't mean to. I shouldn't have interrupted you.
But, you know, here's the thing. This has been going on for quite some time on the destroying the fabric of the United States. You've seen it's been going on in the schools. You have children coming out of school waving signs, calling police officers pigs, dumping water on them, throwing bottles of urine on them. Those are children. Then look what goes on in your colleges, how those students are taught. They're taught that the United States is bad. It's imperialistic. It's taught that white males are bad. They're sponsoring a white supremacy and white nationalism. So this has been going on for a long time, and now it's hitting the fan. Whoever would thought that they would see what happened in Portland and Seattle, where you have mayors and governors that permit that to go on. And then when you have the federal government go about to protect federal buildings, then people are calling them occupying forces and constables. If we don't take this back soon, we're going to have nothing to take back, nothing to reclaim. And conservatives, I never have seen conservatives, especially white conservatives. What's your name, ma'am? Give me a first. You Susan.
My name's Tanya.
Tanya, I'm black.
Yes.
I'm black.
Okay.
Tanya, you are a racist. Now, how are you supposed to respond to that?
Hello?
you can't tell me what I am.
Let me help you, Tanya. You're supposed to tell me, black man, you are racist.
Awesome.
But no, when that word is heard, everybody stops in their tracks and pee in their shoes. They got us out, got people conditioned. And when you're paralyzed, they go about doing what it is that they're doing, which you see. Looting, rioting, burning, and tearing up. Tearing down history in the form of statues of American soldiers who fought many wars, not just one.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. And we're supposed to apologize for whatever color we are, and who knows us individually, and you know if we just
you're not supposed to apologize for nothing, Tanya. You had over 400,000 white males who lost their war in the Civil War, lost their lives in the Civil War. They died and left wives and children fatherless. What if they had not fought in that war and went on to take advantage of the privilege that this great nation offered them? Where would be the generational wealth they would have created? Who owes them?
Oh, boy. I just got goosebumps from that statement. That was, very well put together.
It blows back. Whenever it comes back, it'll give me a lot of feedback.
If we sit back on our hands, and I'm going to say this to whites. Whites, you better get off your duff, because I can't expect this out of blacks. I expect this out of you. We have to save this nation. We can't let this nation go down to a bunch of anarchists, a bunch of ignoramus, these people that's been having and fostering these ideas. They're well-trained. It's not just people that arrive in the United States. You got outsiders that's influencing this. And also, the people who are suffering damages, the people who are suffering damages, why can't we not filing suits against George Soros and the others that's financially sponsoring these people?
Can I break in here a minute? I'm listening
do, Marty.
To this. Here we come up with George Soros again. I was waiting for that to appear. Now let me stay in reference to the riots, like up in Minneapolis. I just moved from up in that area, and what happened in Minneapolis was a long time coming. I don't agree with the rioting and looting, but the night the protest started, it was peaceful. People were protesting. They stopped 2 busloads of white supremacists east of the Twin Cities on 94 coming in to start trouble. Antifa. People said, oh, it's leftist. No. It started out anti-fascism. It was quickly co-opted by the religious, far religious right, and they redesigned it and threw it back out there. And now it's anti-First Amendment or something thing. There's only about 200 of them in the country, but these people are bussed in. Then you got that outfit there in Denver called Rent-A-Crowd.
What do you mean there's only 200 of them in the country?
Yeah, that's about all there is about 200 of them altogether. And
I have a hard time with that number.
Yeah, they actually only have about 200. But you go to this this outfit called Rent-A-Crowd out of Denver. And every time anything country, they got a big ad running on Craigslist. And they'll pay you to come into somebody else's city and riot and burn and loot and do all this stuff. The first big experience we had with that was Ferguson. And those people just about bought the farm.
I don't think that's the only outsource, Marty. I mean, Soros.
There are always going to be
himself.
people who go to the worst. There are always going to be those people. But you have to understand, this has been a long time coming. And the reason people resort to violence, in most cases, other than these rent-a groups, is because without it, nothing changes. You can protest all day long, peacefully. And nothing changes.
Well, what do you call the looting? What do you call? And we've had far more than 200 people in one night that are out there
right.
in different areas in the country
that are looting.
I'm talking
about Antifa and that. But there are people who, of course, will join in the fracas. There always is. There's people who will take advantage of the situation. Some of it is vengeance. Some of it is just criminality. Some of it is just for the fun of it. But they'll do it. But for the most part, these people are screaming for the police executions, and they are executions, to stop. And
well, where are they? I'm going to add in here, and then I'd like to get on with the guests that are here, and as well as back to Piatri,
Pianchi.
But where is their disgust and their rallying for those children that are caught in the crossfire? I'm not hearing or seeing anything about that.
What
so I really
now
I
Exactly. What children are you talking about? Don't, Tanya, we'll have to talk about this off air.
Well, I can name I can name a bunch of them. You got 1,115 since Memorial Weekend 2020 up until last Thursday, which is 67 days, shot in Chicago, and 190 actually killed, including 10-month-old, 18-month-old, 4-year-old children, and no white police officer fired a shot.
And you know that how.
Yep. And in New York City, we're already up to, I believe it's double, I think it is, in New York, I hope I'm getting this right, and we're 9 months into the year compared to what it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a mayor in New York City who said that the only groups that can protest in mass is Black Lives Matter. All others cannot do it.
Yep.
And
there's people that are being arrested for erasing graffiti on their own businesses, for actually painting over the Black Lives Matter words that came out. And I believe that's actually a black man that was doing that. So I just think that this has caused more divide than good, and that if people are against that violence, then I would like to hear about. I'd like to hear from those people in those positions, like the governors, like the mayors that are against it. But more than that, I want to see them do something about it, and not just let them go free.
I don't think they are. I don't think they are. I'm going to tell you something else. Blacks don't go along with Black Lives Matter. You're talking to one. They do not represent me nor my family.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of like when this pink hats came out, for the women's movement. And, I've always, up until, it got like so crazy like it is now. It's like I can't stand by a group that does that. I have a sister that's called me a hardcore feminist. I never thought of myself that way at all. And she said that long before all this crazy stuff started happening. And it's suddenly you can't join the women's march, right? Not that I've been in one, but you can't join that women's march unless you agree with everything else that they plopped on top of that table. And clap when Whoopi Goldberg says that she wants to when she wants to blow up a state building. Anyways, it's just So this is a great spark of conversation. I'd like to hear from Harry and Harry about your feelings about this. Please stay on with us as well, sir.
Well, this is Harry Gibson. And,
Harry, okay.
I was listening to you, and it really disturbs me some things that go on because I read it. The Constitution, the first 10 amendments, it gives the people the right to vote. We go back to the Black Lives Matter, okay? It gives the people the right to vote. Now, why did we have to write in the Constitution that women had the right to vote? Are they not people? Why did you understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That really irritates me. And the same with the black suffrage. Why should we? They're people. They have they're human beings. They have a soul. And I get really disturbed at the fact that we have to write laws to allow people that are humans to do things because of their color or their gender.
Because now we've been given special permission. It's a clock down ahead. It's a no-brainer.
Women could not vote until 1908, and that was the suffragette movement. Before they couldn't vote, and they couldn't inherit property. They couldn't do much of anything.
Right.
And
right.
Black people were only considered 3/5 of a man. So
well,
the 14th
that wasn't
Amendment
biologically
changed.
Now. That wasn't
no,
biologically.
No, no. Was,
there you go.
No, it was,
there you go.
There you go. But they were determined
to
be 3/5 of a man, therefore could not vote. And couldn't own land. They couldn't do anything. So you got the 14th Amendment, which said we all can, but still women couldn't vote. And so, you know, that's been a new thing. We've only been allowed to speak our piece here for about the last, 90 years, whatever that is, 80 years, 70. I don't care. But anyway, that's how it got into the Constitution. But originally, the right to vote was reserved for white men. That's a matter of history.
But it didn't say that. It said people.
Right.
And another thing, you talk about that three-fifth clause. That was on the counting of representation in Congress. They never said that blacks, which they were not citizens. And, you know, what happened in the past happened in the past. And that's the way it was wrote. But Congress came along with the 14th Amendment after the Dred Scott decision and tried to correct that, which they did. At least they tried.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but the thing that bothers me about that is the fact that I want to class you as equal to me, no matter what color you are, no matter what gender you are, and it shouldn't be in any written law or anything that should not allow a person to be the same person that anybody else is as far as a human being. And that has been my contention with our Constitution and our laws and everything that they've done, is because of the fact that they could have, if they'd read the Constitution properly, we wouldn't have to have the 14th Amendment.
And you know, another thing you talk about police brutality. There's 18,000 plus police authorities in this country. They all are not going to do the same. It's not a federal police department that's controlled by the White House. These police departments are controlled by the municipalities that they work in. And like Missouri, Missouri says the power of the people over internal affairs, constitution, and form of government. That the people of this state, this was written in 1875, that the people of this state have the inherent, sole, and exclusive right to regulate their internal government and police thereof. You got people in Ferguson marching, hooping, and hollering, and chanting about not having powers, which effectively they do have the power to control their police.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is Harry Jackson. Hello.
Hi, Harry.
Yeah.
Hi, Harry.
Hey. Yes, this is Harry Jackson. Just chiming
Harry
in
Jackson,
real.
Listen on with us. Please, everybody, feel free to stay on because this is a great conversation. All input is welcome. Harry, once again, is Brenda Angel's husband, but I would like not to just define you as Brenda Angel's husband. If you would be so kind to tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
Okay. Well, I'm a 20-year veteran from the United States Air Force.
Thank you for your service as a facility engineer.
It was my pleasure, and thank you for allowing me to serve. And I've worked for the DOD off and on most of my life. So I'm very familiar with internal kind of government from the DOD side of the house. But I do study a bunch of history. I pick up on it, and the conversation is going really good. And I was going to say the reason for those amendments is actually because of the states' rights issues. And you guys are all linking together, right? It's just in history, each state, which is not actually – we call them states – but in the original context, each of the 13 colonies was actually a country of its own. And you have to think of it that way. Each of the 50 states is a country of its own. And because of the 10th Amendment, each one has a right to set its own standards. They're autonomous outside of the federal context. So they set their own as Mr. Poignier?
Bianchi.
Did I get that right? Pianti. I'll get it right this time. As you stated, Missouri, they have rights there that they may not have in Portland because it's a different country inside of the bigger country.
Absolutely.
And so the 14th Amendment and the Women's Suffragette movement was because other states in the union didn't all agree that people had the same rights. And so they had to pass a federal amendment that basically forced all the states into alignment with each other. So that's the reason why those amendments actually happened. It's not because it wasn't in the original context, but it was easier to do it that way than to have it go to this. Back then, the Supreme Court didn't write rules for everybody else. They actually tried to avoid doing that. So what they did was they passed the amendment. That's the proper process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, sorry, did I miss something?
As they should now avoid writing rules. Don't you
agree? Exactly. The Supreme Court should only say, you know, that this isn't, maybe proper or something like that, but they shouldn't be writing legislation from the bench. It should be the legislators writing the constitutional amendments and getting 35 or 38 states to all agree to it, and then it becomes an amendment. Everybody has the same rule.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because we have things now that are happening that pervert the Constitution, and that's where there's the conflict, is just because this took place does not mean that it is actually Constitution. So then it's constitutional, and then you have to fight for your rights constitutionally, when that should already – that's the staple. That is the base. That is what everything comes from to begin with.
Right. And if it's not contained there, then each state, because of the 10th Amendment, has a right to write its own rules and regulations about that topic.
Right. Okay.
You were born with all the rights of the universe, and the only entity that can take those away is governments, both federal, state, and local. That's why the Constitution exists, to protect you from them.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's rights reserved to states of the people, the National Constitution Center, 10th Amendment. There's all kinds of.
Yeah, it prevents the federal government for interfering in the local, like as in McAllister proper. The federal government has limitations on what it can do in McAllister proper. Same thing in Portland, and that's why the federal government just can't walk in with federal agents and say you got to do it this way or that way, because we also have to protect each of those individual countries known as states.
Okay, so then bringing in the federal government to protect, to stop the violence or stop the destruction of federal property is not correct? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, and this happened, you can go back to Katrina and other disasters. The proper process is that the state government, requests the federal government to come in and assist. That allows the federal government then to the opportunity to bring its resources, or in the case of civil distress, then they can bring in federal troops or federal agents to assist in the situation, to limit that the governor or the government gives them authority to do so.
But, the federal government has the right to protect federal property. If you was in another country and that country came upon a coup, that Marine battalion at that U.S. embassy will go out and protect U.S. Citizens' interests that's operating in those countries. That's what it's supposed to do.
Right.
And the same thing goes, any federal reservation in a state is federal property. It's not the state property. So if the statue is on federal property, then the federal government has the right to protect the statue, or if it's a building or whatever.
Okay. All right, so we agree.
Well, natural disaster, you have in Katrina, the state government and the local government, the mayor of New Orleans, never asked for federal assistance. And so the federal agents could not come in and assist. They were bound by law. They couldn't go
in. And you look at Chicago, where all these U.S. citizens are being mowed down, and the local authorities not doing anything. The governor's not doing anything. So at some point in time, the citizens should plead to the federal government that they need protection.
That is correct. And then, see, that brings up a conundrum. But notice that President Trump has said, I am ready to come and help you. Please let me come and help. And they won't say, help us. See, he's limited by law. He can't just jump in there. Now,
right, but I'm referring to
an insurrection. He's got some extra stuff he can do, but if it's just civil distress, his hands are tied.
Is this a natural disaster? That's my question. This isn't a natural disaster regarding the violence and the taking down of federal property. Those are crimes, right?
Right, a federal property he can protect because that's his property.
Yeah.
Right.
You had
so
some place in the ICE
natural
office,
disaster or civil distress or whatever. The federal government has the right to protect itself from that from that incident, whatever it be. Yes,
right.
Agree with that.
Right. Well, people,
okay,
the thing is,
go ahead.
The thing is that we understand this. Why come this was not taught in schools, whereas today you got young adults and even some old that don't know it. And they're standing around twiddling their thumbs as if they just don't know what to do.
What I would like to do, if everybody is on board with this, I would like to continue this conversation next Sunday. If we could have that collaboration again, because we are running out of time for tonight, as it is a 90-minute show. I found that for the most part, 90-minute shows are just more friendly to our brains. So much at once, even though I've done plenty of 2-hour shows, but I only did plan on a 90-minute show for tonight. Next Sunday, I will plan on a 2-hour show because I also have another guest that's coming on as well. And his name is David Navarro, who might be listening right now, and he was going to come on last week but had a family emergency. So it might all kind of tie in. Interestingly, but I will make sure it's a 2-hour show.
I'm on board with that. I wanted to make a real quick comment about Mayor Brown, if that's okay with you.
Please do.
Okay. I was reading the newspaper article where he wants to remove the fine and make it a trespassing. But if you look up Oklahoma statute 21.1835 on trespassing, that would bump it up to a $250 fine and possibly 10 days in jail. And then the second time, it would be up to 20 days in jail. So just wanted to point out the irresponsible legislation that's going on and how absurd it is that he
I think he's trying to be two people at once. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
He wants to pretend that he was going to be the nice guy, and yet he still wants to have his way. I don't quite understand that. It seems a little pathological to me, but that's only me. What I want to know is why we don't have these so-called experts that are out there that are talking to we the people. Why aren't they talking about taking lipocine, right, Marty? Lipocine, vitamin C, lipocine. Why aren't they talking about taking organic Turkish oregano oil? Why aren't they talking about eating garlic? Why more garlic? Why aren't they talking about ginger? Why aren't they talking about sunlight? Why? Let's get into that just a little.
Because I'll tell you, I knew a doctor, and I won't say his name because I don't have permission, but he got a letter from. What I understand, I was in a class that he was teaching, and he got in trouble because he wasn't prescribing enough medication.
Yep.
And he
I
was
cut you
doing
off now.
More
I cut
teaching
you off
the.
Now.
And he actually
You hold on to that. You hold on to that. I'm sorry, I got to cut you off. I'm Tanya Hathaway. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much to Harry Jackson, Harry Gibson, Brenda Angel, James Tree. Who am I missing? And Pianti.
Yes.
I'm Tanya Hathaway,
right,
with Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's 89.9 KLRB FM. And we'll be back next Sunday. We'll also be back on this Tuesday night, okay, for another discussion. But please be sure to catch up back up with us next Sunday on the same conversation for anybody
who finds this interesting.
What times,
Tanya?
Pardon me?
What time?
At 7 o'clock Central Time, Pianti.
Thank you.
Thank you. Contact me on Injustice in Oklahoma Exposed Facebook page or injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com, which is part of Journeys to Justice. So feel free to contact me there. Love to have you back on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night and God bless.
Good night.
God bless.
Thank you.